Accession number 19935, Reel 4.
Jim Wilkes, Reel 4.
As I say, however, the powers that be decided to send the British troops to occupy Java. Some went to Surabaya like we did, and some went to Batavia, the other side of the island. Consequently, as I say, I wasn't there at the time because I hadn't come out of hospital. Consequently, the West Yorks were in action against the Indonesians, which was a bit rough, really, when you think they'd come all the way through Burma to get killed and wounded when the war was over, because the war finished out there in 15th of August. And I understand that a patrol of ours went out, an officer, who I believe was an Australian, and six men, and they just disappeared, never been found to this day, just disappeared. So, which is terrible, really, when the war's over.
What was your own experience in Java?
Oh, that, as I say, the fighting that finished when I got there. Just imagine, we was in Surabaya, now just imagine a place as big as Bradford or a big city, absolutely deserted. All the shops there with stuff in, motor cars, motorbikes, you name it. Well, the boys went mad. They were driving around on motorbikes, cars, and if they wanted anything out of the shop, they just went and got it. Whether you call it looting or not, I don't know. But in fact, some of our lads, I don't know if this they finish up in the guardhouse, because they'd finish up with some gold bars. Only stamped to Netherlands East Indies, like. In fact, they were still in the under close arrest when I came, when I left them. I don't know what happened to them. But they probably did a couple of years and got away with it. And then from Surabaya, we went back to Singapore to Changi Jail, guarding Jap war prisoners that were awaiting trial. We had them.
How were they treated?
This is it. The British troops were too soft. They used to come out for exercise, and they used to bow. I mean, I was only a lance corporal or whatever it was then, and they used to bow to you, you know, which, right, what's the word? Servile, you know, kowtow, you know. And it made you think to yourself, hell's bells, not so long thing, they were cutting our blokes to bits. And our blokes, they were giving them cigarettes and, you know. They weren't ill-treated at all, weren't the Jap prisoner of war. You got the odd bloke or one or two to say, and you Jap bastard, like, you know. Apart from that, I never saw any ill-treatment.
Was this in 45 or 46?
Oh, this would be 46, yeah, 46. Yeah, yes, because we stayed in Surabaya, and in Surabaya quite a few weeks.
What was the attitude of the civilians in Singapore and Surabaya to the British troops?
Well, we didn't see many civilians in Surabaya, because, as I said, the place was deserted. We didn't see many at all, for some reason or other. Singapore, just the opposite. They all smiled and glad to see you, like, oh, okay, Johnny. Like, no problem in Singapore at all. Yeah.
Did you like it in Singapore?
Oh, yes, Singapore was all right, yes, yeah. Well, you see, you had to like it. The war was over, you were alive, you know. Then from Singapore, went up to Kuala Lumpur, capital of Malaya. Didn't have a bad time there. From Kuala Lumpur...
What duties did you have in Kuala Lumpur?
Oh, Kuala Lumpur was very good. Yeah, it's I was back there last year, actually. Nice place. And it was nice, and the people were nice. They're no problem at all. From there we went to Penang, beautiful little island off the coast of Malaya. I was there a couple of years ago as well, in barracks there, in the capital of Penang, Georgetown. Forget the name of the barracks. As a matter of fact, I got demobbed from there in, November 1946, I believe. Came home from there.
How do you feel now about having served in the West Yorks in the Second World War?
Well, we all said we didn't want to go there, but we're all glad we did and saw what we saw and experienced what we did. Because out, I suppose it would be the same in the 8th Army, but out in the 14th Army, there was that much comradeship. And the silliest today, like with the Burma Star Association, you know, it's one of those jobs. In a way, you're glad you were there, you know, an experience. You won't want to do it again, like, of course. It's just sad that so many of them are still left there. Yeah.
Did you have any long-term effects from having served in Burma and the war?
The first, as I say, I came home, I believe I landed home in November 1946. And this big scar I've got down my abdomen, for some reason or other, it started getting right inflamed. And it came up in a big red fiery lump. So I was in bed with it. My dad was in bed also upstairs at the time with pleurisy. So I was in a bed downstairs with this big red lump on the wound. And my mother sent for the doctor, like. He was coming to see my dad in any case. And I brought home a bottle of Mepocrine with me. I suppose I pinched them from somewhere. The doctor came in. Well, I said, funny, is that like? Can't understand that, because it wasn't coming to a head. It was just one big fiery red lump. And he saw the Mepocrines. He said, what are you doing with them? And I said, no, I had them in Burma. I said, I had malaria 3 times. Right? I just brought my... He said, well, who were you with in Burma? I said, I was 2nd Battalion West York. He said, I was the medical officer in 2nd West Yorks at one time in Burma. I thought, what a small world. I didn't remember him, of course. Like, but there he is.
Did you have any long-term psychological effects of having served in Burma?
No, for a while, a few months after, I'd wake up. I don't know why this should be. I'd wake up thinking to myself, where the hell's my rifle? And I'd be sort of scratching around in bed, frightened. But the hell am I going to do with it? But it went away. They were only for a few months after that. But I'd wake up thinking I was still out there, I suppose. But nothing long now.
Did you have any difficulty readjusting to civilian life after the army?
No, none whatsoever. Now, I came home and brown as a berry, and as I say, I'd only been home that 2 or 3 weeks when this thing occurred on my stomach, right? But we got rid of that eventually. It died away on its own, I believe, and I got going with my mate, like, one or two, and got out and got caught, obviously I was single out there, like. And that was one thing I was always, people I felt sorry for out there was a married man with children. I was 18, 19, and I sort of didn't give a damn. In fact, to be honest, I was fully convinced I would go through without a scratch. That I was convinced of that. And when I eventually did get wounded, I was that more surprised than in fact, I was, as I said, I was that mad I got up and... But I always felt sorry for them lads that were married with kids, because it must have been terrible for them.
Did they show it?
Oh, yeah. Well, he got one or two breakdowns, at one time, going back to Burma, you know, we had four or five self-inflicted wounds to get out of it.
How did they manage to do that?
One in particular, there again, shall I say his name?
He might, well, be, might be best not to.
Might be not to. He was a brain gunner in our section. Now, when you on in your slip trenches and you're stood down and you're not going anywhere that day, the brain gun has always got to be manned. So the brain gunner's there with the brain gun. He does his 2 hours. So therefore, somebody else has to do his 2 hours. So therefore, the brain gunner, when he leaves your brain gun there, he hasn't got a weapon. So whoever's relieving him gives him their rifle or whatever it may have, you see. So everybody, so this particular day, it was my turn to relieve him. So I gave him my rifle. I had his brain gun. And I was doing my 2 hours in the slip trench. So I did my 2 hours. I was going to go back to him. I nearly said his name then. Going back to him. And all of a sudden, there was such a hell of a bang. And it was him. And it shot itself through the foot with my rifle. So, of course, he was wheeled away. Company commander sent for me, Major Dunlop, I can mention his name. Major Dunlop says, Anna Wilkes, says, what's this about you leaving around up the spout and the safety catch off? I said, rubbish, sir. Rubbish. He said, I thought so. I said, I would never leave around up the spout and safety catch off. I said, that's right, all right. Wilkes says, come back in half an hour. And that's a sign of statement. Say this private had done this self-inflicted wound, and so far as I know, he was down for a court-martial. But there again, if it came from Leeds, I can mention that. There again, we've got the Yorkshire Sport, and there it is, private so-and-so, wounded in action. And it shot itself with my blasted rifle head. Another one, the fool, we were up this big hill, and he shot himself in the foot, but we were up this big hill, right rocky it was, and we couldn't get him down that night. It was too dark, too dangerous. When we did get him down, eventually, he lost a lot of blood, and we understand he lost his leg altogether. Another time, wherever you was dug in, one of the first jobs you had to do was dig a latrine, a big deep slit trench. And every time you used it, there was a shore there. Every time you used it, you covered it with a spoonful of keep the flies and what have you done. I'd been to this latrine, and everywhere you went, you had to take the rifle, of course. I'd been to this latrine, coming back, and this lad there again, I won't say his name. He come past me, carrying his rifle at the trail. I just got back into my slit trench, and there was a big bang. And it's him. He shot himself. His excuse for it, the trigger that caught in a branch. But even so, he shouldn't have had a round up the spout, should he, you see? So, another one, he's in the slit trench, cleaning his rifle, stood up, with his hand on top of the barrel, and he accidentally pulled the trigger, and he got a bullet through the palm of his hand. That was all with it. You see, you got to bear in mind, we were wet through nearly every day, and even them conditions. That was it.
So did you feel that you could understand it?
Well, I suppose I could in a way, but if we'd have all done that, it would have been a bit of a mess. Funny enough, this private who shot himself with my rifle, going back a long time when we was in Beaufort, and I came out of hospital, he was one of the lot there that had just finished their 6 weeks training, you see. And he turned out to me, it's all right for you, he said, you're here for another 6 weeks. He said, it's blokes like you that's making this war last a long time. And he was a shot himself in his foot with my rifle.
What did you mean, blokes like you?
Well, he thought I was malingering. He thought I was stopping, getting another 6 weeks away from the, you see.
So, do you think it was because the troops were wet and uncomfortable and in bad conditions?
Oh, it was the way. Well, let's face it, you wet through more or less day after day. If you're in a slit trench, you might be stood in a foot of water. The grub, you got your food, but it wasn't that good, right, you know. And it, no matter how much water you may be short of, we all had drinking bottles, of course, you had to shave. Obviously, it was cold water. And you were more a shaving blind because you didn't carry mirrors around with you. But you had to shave. This time I had my rifle. I got pulled up for a dirty barrel. This is all in action. And so I thought, I'll try to clean this. So I got my pull through. And instead of putting a piece of 4x2 in it, I put a piece of 4x4 in it. And I got the damping stuck in the middle of the barrel. I got half the pull full through it, and it was stuck. So I tied the pull through around a thin tree, and I gently, very gently, eased the pull through to the final. I got it out. I know she would be stood behind me, but Major Dunlop. Let's have a look at that, Wilkes. 4x4. Go up Sergeant Major and put yourself on a charge. So I went to Sergeant CSM Hodgson, they call him. Tell him what I've done, on a charge. Right, you're on company commander's hall, is it morning, you say? So at morning we lined up, me and two or three more blokes. Company commander's in his slit trench, and we lined up like dummies. And CSM come round, inspecting us all. Wet through and what have you. They put me on another charge, I'd be in muddy boots. And we're there, in the runny jungle for a bit good. So I've got 14 days for that. 7 days for pull through and 7 days for muddy boots.
What did the punishment consist of?
Well, as I said, this particular time we're up this big hill, and the water obviously was all at the bottom of the hill. So every day, after we stood down, of course, I'd take this mule with a water pan at each side, take the rifle, of course, and on my own, go down this big hill to where the water was, fill the two panniers up, and take the mule back up that. I'd do that for, well, as long as we were on that hill. And if any were to do it cook, well, when I say cook, I'd cook, I would just open there.
How do you think you came to use the wrong pull through?
Well, the pull through was all right, but I don't know if you've been in there, but when you put this piece of flannel out, it's called 4x2. It's 4 inch by 2 inch, you see. And that's supposed to clean your barrel. Sometimes barrels get pitted, so you can put what's called a gauze on and pull that through. Well, I didn't have a gauze, so instead of 4x2, I put 4x4, which was basically too big. But I thought it would clean the barrel, and I got it stuck, you see. So I was out of order using 4x4, and I got myself put on a charge for it, you see. But later on, where was we? Oh, just before I got wounded, we'd been somewhere, and we'd got a bit of a hiding. And we were left with 5 men in my section. By that time, Major Dunlop had gone down with scrub typhus. We lost him. He didn't die, but we lost him. Major also come to command of them. And somebody came up to me and said, "Major also wants you, Wilkie." "Oh, hell, what have I done now?" And he's there and he slipped and said, "Major also." "Yes, sir." "What have I done, sir?" He said, "Wilkes, I want you to take a stride." I said, you know what? He said, I want you to take a Wilkes. He said, I said, you're joking, sir. He said, no, he says, I know what you are, he said, what you're not like, he says, but there's only four more men in your section, he said, and you're the longest survivor, as you might say. In a couple of days, we're getting some reinforcements, he said, and so I'd like you to take a strike. He said, now, when the war's over, and all being well, we get out of it, he said, if you want to go back to your bad old ways, he says, you can do. And I said, all right, sir. And I never got put on another charge again. I finished up coming home, acting sergeant, bumping out. I behaved myself. I think it was a case of having to do. Major also.
Were you happy to have the responsibility?
Yes, yeah. But there again, you see, whereas when I was told to be the advanced section, my job then was to nominate a leading scout and a second scout. Well, I don't know why, but I just couldn't order anybody to do it, so I used to do leading scout myself. I used to do it myself. Sometimes you're better off leading scout, because they let the leading scout go and then knock lumps out of the main patrol, you see. So sometimes, but that's what I did anyway, and it worked out all right. I'm still here.